The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, Dr. Ray. I love your show.
Let me show you what it looks like to be a holy person, and maybe you'll want to be holy like me.
You just patted yourself on the back.
You seem like an honest guy.
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
I think you have a way of making people feel relaxed.
She needs to feel the consequences of being a jerk.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
Obviously, I'm a failure. Obviously, I'm inept.
Yes. You are awesome. Keep up the good fight, my friend.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Having an in-body experience. It's a weird feeling, you know? I sense like I'm trapped inside my body, and I'm looking out through my eyes, and sound is coming in through my ears. Oh, just a very, very unsettling experience. Good to have you with me on this Doctor Is In on this Look Back Friday. It's something we developed on the program here, myself, Andrew Krucek, folks here at Ave, because so often I want to say so much more. I would say roughly, if I were to put a percentage on how often I want to say much more, I'd say it's about 110%. No, I can't do that. The medium of radio does not allow that. There are many people who want to talk, and at best I can give a thought or two of some type, maybe a little helpful educational direction, a guidance. But certain calls, I think, boy, I'd like to go off in that direction. I would like to talk about that with this call. But the caller often dictates the direction of the call. So for the moment, at the time, I talk with the caller about their concern, their question, their comment. But I put it aside for a future date, so that I can say more stuff. And that's what Look Back Friday is. We run the calls. Andrew Krucek edits them capably. We identify them at the time. I mark them down on a little sheet. Said this is a call for Look Back Friday. We put the date on it. We go back and we gather up these calls. Andrew edits them. We play them on this program. And nobody listens to the program 100% of the time. I don't listen to the program 100% of the time. So much of the time, the calls are new. The edit version is new. So what I say is also new because it's on Look Back Friday, but the whole show is new. We're going to do that today. So before we get there, our ever-present, our ubiquitous monologue. I'm getting some pushback on saying monologue. A little bit too toxic masculine. I got a call many, many years ago when I was just starting on Catholic radio. Mom said that she, and then this will show you how old this call is. She was in her daughter's bedroom. She happened to see her daughter's diary, probably lying open or just lying. She said, I started to read and I was totally shocked. Not only by the situations my daughter was describing that she was in, but the language used to describe those situations. Mom said, I confronted my daughter and she roared into high dudgeon. How dare you invade my privacy? That's not yours to look at. What were you doing in my room anyway? And the daughter made this ongoing, intense case that mom was just so in the wrong. So mom said, I'm not in the wrong. I have every right to be in there. And if I think that your safety is at stake, there is no right to privacy. She didn't say any of that. She called me and she said, I feel terrible. I said, why? Because of what you read? She said, no, because am I really allowed to to look at my daughter's private things? So, in a period of, I guess, several minutes at the time this altercation took place, Mom went from being a concerned parent, protective of her daughter's emotional, moral safety, to a snoop, a narc, an intruder. I said to Mom what I just said Mom should have said. There is no right to privacy, not where safety is involved. Yes, you don't go in there deliberately with a bright light scouring every corner of the room unless you have some reason, you know, like a reasonable search and seizure. To get a warrant, you have to have an expectation that there is reason to look. But if you do find something, there is no right to privacy. Where did this come from? Right to privacy. That doesn't even make good law. Right to privacy, at least in some cases, that's how abortion got its momentum. It may make good law in other areas, but it doesn't make for good parenting. Now, here's the problem. Remember diaries? They're kind of cute now, aren't they? Handwritten, emotions on a piece of paper. Kind of there for the world to see once you find the diary. Not so in the digital age. Those have replaced the phones, the computers. They've replaced diaries, and they are much more secretive, much more easy to hide. You know, there's only so many spaces you can put a diary in that bedroom. You can put anything on that phone and keep it away from anybody except the NSA. And I'm going to assume that you parents don't have contacts with the NSA to go get that stuff. So given that, what are you going to do? Well, I think the right to protect supersedes the right to privacy. That's the parents' number one or number two duties, is to protect moral, emotional, social well-being of that child. There are ways that you can know everything that comes and goes on that phone. There are programs to do this. It's not complex. Go to your local cell phone place. I want to pair up this phone. I want to sync this phone to my own so that anything that happens on this phone, I will see. I will know. You can do that. Very few parents do that, by the way. Very, very few. Some put parental safeguards on there. They limit the hours on the phone. You can do that. They limit access to apps. You can do that. They limit access to the internet. They put some kind of safeguards on there on the internet. You can do that. A higher percentage of parents do that, but it's still less than half. It is definitely still less than half. Is it a fear of breaching privacy? I don't think so. Even though some parents might think, oh, you know, this is their world. And I know when I was a teenager, I didn't want my parents looking over my shoulder. But you know the difference? The difference is, when you were a teenager and you didn't want your parents looking over your shoulder, your contacts were within a very relatively small social circle. People in your school or your social church team network, and you didn't communicate with them through a private system like a cell phone. The difference now is that child with a smartphone can communicate with anyone in the world, can go any place in the world, has in the palm of their hand access to all people, all places, good, bad, smart, dumb, holy, evil. That's the difference. So as a sentinel, as a parent, you have to be much more watchful. Much, 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 much more watchful. Typically when a parent gets burned finding out where their child has been and done and gone and who they've contacted with and who they now have a love relationship with over that smartphone. They're shocked. They're shocked. But what they don't realize is that this pattern has been going on for quite some time. A simple rule. It's kind of like discovering that your child stole something. A simple rule. The first time you discover it, it's highly unlikely it was the first time it happened. So, one, there is no right to privacy where a child's moral, emotional, social well-being is concerned. Right to protect trumps the right to privacy. Two, the child can very, very easily lock you out of their world. Now, much of their world is online. They can lock you out. So you're going to have to find ways to enter that world. And fortunately, we have the technology to do it. A few thoughts. When we come back, Mary from Illinois. She's talking about her husband. Something I see an awful, awful lot of among husbands. Even what you would consider the otherwise good ones. I'm Dr. Ray.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 10 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan cost goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com. Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
I might have gone to church, you know, at Christmas time, gradually quit going. It's not as scary as I thought it was. It's a much more warm and open place, and God really is about love. It's not about the rules and the things that I remember as a young child. It really is about the love that God has for each one of us that's so deep and wonderful.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for any reason, visit CatholicsComeHome.org.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta. The Catholic faith has enemies. We're Catholics. We have enemies. They are a danger to the faith. And yet we're called to defend the faith, to instruct the ignorant, and to love our enemies. These enemies abuse divine revelation, they abuse science and religion, they abuse our history and our past, they abuse power and wealth. We have to learn how to deal with our enemies by picking up a copy of my book, Dangers to the Faith. You can find it online at AveMariaRadio.net.
Nice to have you with me. Thank you for joining me here. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Program Doctor is in Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. This is the Friday version. Look back Friday. I want to go to Mary. Mary's call came in, best we can figure out, a few months back. She's talking about her husband and something that, well, let me put it to you this way. This is not the number one reason spouses come in for marriage counseling in my office, but it's probably in the top five.
Well, let me put it to you this way. You know how I talked about parents are losing authority? I would think that fathers are losing authority faster than mothers.
I agree.
I cannot tell you how many dads allow mom to be the disciplinarian. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you.
Well, in this case, I want to ask you, as that's happened, it's bigger than that because, of course, children love the weak link. They love to go find that and then, and that works for them. So mom has two choices. Either keep fighting for, you know, the right way you want to train them up and come out the lunatic, or give it up and hope that it comes out okay. The problem is when they grow into adult children, and now dad pretends that there isn't the big elephant in the room that's been created, that's just transferred from a teenage child to an adult child. What's your advice of how to navigate through a marriage that way, where the dad says to the mom all day long, I see now what I did. I see my lack of existence as a father. I see what it did to you. I know how this caused a rift between us. We are healed. We are fine now. But the rift remains between mom and kids, and he won't recognize it to them. What responsibility do adult children have to this? I've heard you say to people before, you're at risk for losing your daughter. But I think there's a club out there of us, Dr. Ray, that perhaps, you know, I'm okay with that. If they're going to, you know, choose this way to be, this disrespectful, dishonoring, you know, whatever, I don't feel like I'm losing anything. I feel like I'm getting peace from God as I lay it deeply in prayer at the foot of the cross. For his timing to heal it, I'm okay with that. The problem is that the facade of between dad being okay that they don't call on birthdays, they don't. All they do is cake. They like to cake. I said no to the gravy train a long time ago, but you know, I'm only 50%. So, what do you do with adult children?
Mary, while you were talking, dear, I had about 27 questions on more specifics.
Oh, good. Good.
But I'm not going to ask all 27 because you're not paying for this. However, let me see if I got it right. Your husband came to the realization that he was not a strong father and he didn't stand beside you. That's good. That's good. Okay, so we got a little bit of victory there. He apologized. And I've seen guys do this. I've seen them come into my office with their wives when the kid's 24 years old and look back and recognize, I can't believe I did that. Okay, got that. Well, now, this child, how old is this child here that you're talking about?
In 30s.
Oh, ho, ho, ho. Okay, this ain't no kid no more. Got that.
No.
So, your husband still has some of the residual stuff left in him, which is, well, I didn't really want to confront it then. I realized I was wrong, but I'm not going to confront it now. Okay, so there's probably some of that going on, correct?
Yeah, I think he's afraid to take off his friend hat. He just doesn't want to muddy those waters between losing popularity and friends as opposed to tough love with father. But you get the benefit of that if you put that tough love hat on.
If the child is mistreating you, you don't have to put yourself in a position to be mistreated. All right. So, yes. Oftentimes when I say you got to keep up a relationship, that's in the context of the kid living somewhat immorally and the parent saying, I don't approve. Should I shut him off? No, you got to keep the relationship up as best you can. Now, if the child is unpleasant, uncooperative, difficult, and disrespectful, you don't have to put your face there to get slapped. I got that. If he wants to, if he wants to say, well, I don't think it's that bad, then you tell him, well, then you relate to her. Okay? Because for me, as far as I'm concerned, I was the bad guy growing up, and she blames me. And this is the byproduct of what happened. You recognize what you did, but here is the repercussions.
All those 27 questions came roaring back to me right now. Do you hear what mom said in the first couple sentences? She said, do I give up? Now, she was referring back to when the kids were in the home. Do I give up? Or do I remain the lunatic? It depends how you define lunatic. If you argue and yell and scream and badger and preach, you get a reputation very quickly as being the ugly parent and the other parent is the sweet parent. But you don't have to be a lunatic to have quiet authority. I tell this to moms all the time. In our culture, women, even if they work outside the home, still do the lioness's share of the domestic work. They're more likely to cart the kids around. They're more likely to do the laundry. They're more likely to cook. This gives them leverage. This gives mom tremendous leverage. And you don't have to be a lunatic to exert your leverage. If a child's disrespectful to you, and then 2 minutes later she comes down and wants you to take her somewhere because she has practice, you look at her as if to say, I'm sorry, excuse me? You want me to take you somewhere after you talk to me like that? I'm not doing that. Now, that means dad has to do it if he's there. My experience is a lot of times the dads won't. Yeah, they'll undercut mom, or they'll be good guy, nice guy, Disney dad, obtuse. But when it comes to actually saying, okay, I'll take you, that's a little bit, doesn't always happen. Then, she said, dad realizes what he did. Sorta, is my opinion. Sorta. She said, he's afraid to take off his friend hat. Well, if dad were in my office, I'd be talking to him and I would say, you know, your friend hat is limited because you'll only be a friend so long. Because if you are dealing with a difficult, spoiled adult, then it's only a matter of time before you too frustrate them. You too develop friction in your relationship. So enjoy the friend hat now, because you can't be a friend and be a good parent. It's just very difficult to do. Now, don't misunderstand me. With young adults that you raise well and are pleasant, responsible human beings, yes, you evolve. You do become a good friend to them. That's ideally what you want. You become a great friend to them. You have a wonderful association with them. That's good. But in this case, where dad is allowing the daughter to mistreat mom, I mean, I read that between the words, and the daughter is demanding, and dad is capitulating because he wants to stay on the daughter's good side. That's a losing game, in my experience. And there is one other thing he's got to consider deeply, and I think all men got to consider this. When you throw your lot into a difficult young adult over your spouse because you're more concerned about keeping peace with that young adult, or that adult in this case, she's 38 years old, over your spouse, keeping peace in a relationship with your spouse, that's risky strategy. Because your spouse, if you want a decent marriage, your spouse gets your first loyalty. I learned a long time ago that my wife has to come first. Has to come first. I can't undercut my wife to take a side with my child when my wife has a reasonable position, which she does 99.92% of the time. Dads, I'm telling you, it is almost always a losing game to throw your allegiance in with a difficult child over your spouse. That almost never turns out well. I'll talk a little bit more about this when we get back, unless I jump on another call here. I'm Dr. Ray. This is Look Back Friday. And in a couple of minutes, I'll look back again.
Bishop Robert Barron.
Find out in any cultural situation, who's the Lord? There's somebody or some principle, some figure, some institution that has central importance in that culture. Whether it's king, whether it's the military, who knows what it is? Go up and down the centuries. What's the Lord? The declaration of the Lordship of Jesus will always be a challenge to whatever that reigning Lord happens to be. The Lord today is my personal freedom. I decide what my life is. I decide who I am. I decide everything from my gender to the ultimate meaning of my life. Now that personal freedom is so powerful that it's become the Lord. To evangelize the culture is therefore to challenge them and to say, no, it's not your own ego, not your own freedom that's Lord. Jesus determines the meaning of your life. Jesus is the center of your life, not your own freedom.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
There is essentially one true priest, says the Catholic Catechism, and that is Jesus Christ. All others are his ministers. There is the common priesthood in which all of the baptized and confirmed faithful participate according to their vocation. Bishops and priests make up the ministerial priesthood, which is essentially at the service of the common or holy priesthood, the faithful. Jesus is the one unique mediator between God the Father and the faithful. With a single offering, he brought about salvation once and for all. Still, that sacrifice is made present through the celebration of the Mass. Christ is made present through the ministerial priesthood without diminishing the uniqueness of his own priesthood. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Website is drray.com. Many of you ask questions that deal well with books I've written. There's about 15 to 18 books and DVDs on my website bookstore. So if you are interested, there's a little summary of all the books. You can find out if that would suit your particular situation. Several on discipline, one on marriage, several on faith, one on emotions, one on family friction because of faith, my most recent, Thinking Like Jesus, one on grandparenting. Somebody asked me the key to writing a lot of books. I said, oh, that's real simple. You can't worry about them being very good. No, I hope they are for you. Let's go to, I'm going to go to Nora in Florida.
So my daughter is two, and about 3 months ago, we had our second child. So we were expecting a little bit of pushback. The discipline isn't working, and she's not listening. And so she's super smart, you know, like she can read books by herself, and she can play songs on the piano by ear. But she also has some, like, difficulties like getting dressed and doing some other stuff. So there's a little bit of asynchronous development going on. And as she is like cognitively developing, she's also not listening and not responding to discipline. So we've tried like time out and we've tried taking toys away. Well, she doesn't play with toys, so we don't have anything to take away. And time out doesn't work because she just sits there and plays by herself. She likes time out. And I've even tried spanking, but then it turns like it winds up not working because she comes over and spanks her sister. If her little sister is crying and she's
Nora, have you ever had a 2-year-old before?
No.
So this is as old as your daughter has ever been?
Yes.
Now, do you think using words to get her to cooperate is the way to go?
Not really, but it's the
right.
It's the only thing that kind of works right now.
Nah. What you're describing in this very brief description you've given me is multiple layers of, well, I hate to do this, but I think that so many parents have been misguided by so many notions that now dominate the parenting landscape, one of which, you say she doesn't listen. Well, she's not going to listen, Nora. She's a kid.
Right.
And just because you tell her to stop doing something, she's not going to stop. Okay, so that's the first thing. You have to teach her to listen. In other words, when you say what you have to say, you're going to follow through with action. But then you say, another thing, the discipline doesn't work. Well, of course it does. It's just you have to teach this over a long period of time. When you put her in timeout and you say she plays, well, if there's nothing to play with, I don't care that she plays. You say she doesn't care if she likes timeout. No, she doesn't. When was the last time she ever went to the corner by herself and just said, I'm going to go play in the corner?
She does it all the time.
She makes the best of it. That doesn't mean she likes it.
Okay.
Here's what I would suggest. Boy, I hate doing this because I just don't want this to be a push product show. Again, I have a book that really covers all of this. It's called Discipline That Lasts a Lifetime. It is my most popular discipline book. It is 100 of the most common discipline questions I get asked from parents. It deals with timeout. It deals with she doesn't listen. It deals with we just had a baby and now she's acting up, et cetera, et cetera. By far, that'll give you 100 times more advice than I could give you now. Let me just leave it this way. One, you have to teach her to listen, and you do that by when you say something, either yes or no, you follow through with action. Two, the action is something that you have to make stick. If she goes to timeout, she has to stay there. That's two. Three, I don't think it has anything whatsoever to do with you having a baby. I think it has much more to do that she's getting older, and she's realizing, hey, I don't have to listen to you. I've got my own ideas about the way things should be. That's what's happening. When you spank her, you say that doesn't work because she goes and spanks her sister. Well, no. She's not allowed to spank her sister. You have to do something about that.
You listen to how people talk. You listen for keywords. If I knew nothing else about Nora, within the first two sentences of that call, I would have drawn some conclusions. I would have thought she's very much trying to do everything by the psychological books. She wants to do it right, psychologically correctly. She reads a lot. Or she is in a profession that has had its share of teaching about child development, psychology, sociology, social work, nursing, medical, speech, something along those lines. Now, how did I know that? Did you catch it? It was, I believe, the second sentence. She said, my daughter is starting to show asynchronous development. What she was saying, and I think from what she was describing, she was misunderstanding the term. What she was saying was, on one hand, she shows interest in looking at books, and cognitively, she seems a bit advanced for her years, on one hand. But then she said, but she's not listening. And she looked at that as a sign of asynchronous development. Not at all. Not at all. And then, when someone says a child doesn't listen, the implication is that they expect the child to listen. The children are supposed to listen simply because you've instructed, simply because you've prohibited, simply because you've reasoned. The child is supposed to, when a parent says listen, they really mean cooperate, obey. She's listening just fine. Doesn't agree with it. She doesn't have any intent to go along with it. And that's pretty much the way about 98.26% of two-year-olds are. That's pretty much the way the majority of kids are. You want to stretch that? It's probably pretty much the way a lot of adults are. We don't listen just because somebody tells us. We don't listen just because somebody's reasonable. We don't listen because somebody tries to be persuasive. We listen because it's in our best interest to listen in most cases. Or out of respect if we're older and we are trying to live a moral, godly life. We listen because we are charitable or we're concerned about the other person. But by and large, for Nora here, she was confused. She was confused because this little girl wasn't obeying and didn't seem to respond to discipline. On the other side of the break, I'll address that, and then we'll go to a question. Is dreaming a sin? When you're asleep, not when you're awake.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams, and this is The Logic of Catholicism. Solanus Casey said, "Appreciation is as necessary for social order and harmony as are the laws of gravity for the physical world." Have you ever appreciated what you can't not know? What is it that you know without thinking and take on faith? You know, for instance, that you have to breathe, but normally you don't think about it. Stick out your thumb. Look at it. Without it, you could not pick up a pencil. You can't not know that you have breath or thumbs, and yet you have to think to pick up that pencil. Are you holding your breath? Do you think it's time to breathe? Today, go on social media and tell someone you appreciate breath and thumbs. And that's the logic of Catholicism. Explore more at AveMariaRadio.net. Under resources, look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic?
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to
why
a priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to
The Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary and are committed.
As far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders. Today, 2 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at AveMariaRadio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
I want to continue addressing that previous look back call, Nora calling about her 2-year-old that she said had asynchronous development. That tells you that's a parent who reads. Either that or she is in some kind of helping profession. I was making the point that the little girl wasn't bothered by discipline. That's what mom said. It doesn't bother. Timeouts don't bother. There's a big difference between showing bother and the discipline working. It doesn't matter at all if the child doesn't seem to be bothered by discipline. What matters is the behavior changing. She says she goes to the corner and she plays. Okay. She's making the best of a bad situation. She doesn't go to the corner voluntarily. She doesn't just walk up to her mother and go, "Hey, Mom, I got a little free time. You mind if I go meditate in the corner for a while?" That's not going to happen. Parents think that because a child is unaffected by discipline, on the surface, that it doesn't matter and it won't work. Let's say that you've decided that your child doesn't do the dishes without being nagged. And you tell Dawn, sorry, you tell Hazel, sorry, that she's going to be fined 50 cents every time you have to ask her a third time. You'll give her up to three even. First night, give her a third time and you say, I need 50 cents. So she comes up and she hands you the 50 cents. Doesn't seem to be distressed by it at all. Next night, same thing. 50 cents. Here you go. Bothers me a little bit, but not that much. So a parent might say, well, I tried that. It didn't do anything. That's it. She gave me the 50 cents. Discipline works over time. Parents will say, yeah, I sent him to the corner. I sent him to the corner a bunch of times. He didn't care. It didn't bother him. Well, first of all, yes, it did. Because that's not where he's going to go on his own. But second of all, the first 27 times, it doesn't bother him, maybe. It's like, okay, this is the cost of doing business. I misbehave. I got to stand over here. All right, big deal. The payoff was I got to do what I wanted. But then corner visit 28 through 56, yeah, it's getting a little bit irritating. Corner visit 57 through 145. Okay, I've had about enough of this corner thing, and I'm ready to start controlling my behavior. That's the way it goes. When a parent of a two-year-old tells me that a discipline doesn't work, well, the number one reason, of course, is by and large the parent's not real consistent with it. But the other reason is this. You can't know if a discipline is going to work with a two-year-old. They're too young. Enough time hasn't passed. You've probably only been disciplining them for a couple of months. They're two. You started when they were 20 months, and now they're 27 months. By the way, when do you stop counting months, you know? I think I stopped counting months when I was 322 months old. I forget. I don't know. But they've only been getting disciplined for something, for, you know, spitting on their little sister off and on for 7 months. Well, okay, let me draw a parallel here. Most of you listening to me go to confession. Do you walk into the confessional and say, bless me, Father, for I have, well, okay, why don't you just bless me? I have nothing to tell you. Bless me, Father, for I have nothing to tell you. At my age, if I haven't conquered sins by now, I mean, how many years and decades do I need to get rid of these sins? How long is it going to take me to learn? Am I not listening to God? What is going on here? No, Father, I pretty much haven't had anything to say the last couple of years. I've just been coming in to get the graces. And so why don't you just give me a real, you know, real light penance, maybe half a sign of the cross, something like that, maybe a quarter, and I'll be on my way. Or are you like me? Bless me, Father. Look, I wrote these sins down. They haven't changed much in the last 32 years. Pretty much the same stuff I've been telling you every time I come in here. Now, why is this? Why don't I get better? Why don't I learn? What is wrong with me? I'm a grown-up. I have a lot more self-control than a two-year-old. My wife says I have the self-control of a six-year-old. Triple a two-year-old. So, given this, why is it that we look at a kid and go, he's not listening, he's not learning, the discipline doesn't make any difference? Why don't we apply the same standard to us? And we certainly have a lot more maturity and self-control. Okay, well, maybe a little more maturity and self-control than the average four-year-old. So there was just a lot of things that were confusing Nora. And I got to go to a break, but there are ramifications to this confusion. Because if you think something is wrong because your child is not listening, if you think she's unusual because she makes the best of discipline, if you think she's not learning by discipline, what are you going to do? You're going to start looking for explanations. And these explanations may take you further away from the reality, which is she's two, which is it takes time, which is she'll change, but she may not seem to be bothered by it for quite a while. I'll be back.
EWTN home video highlight for October is the EWTN Family Celebration from Denver, Colorado. John Ed Williams, Father Mitch Pacwa, Dr. David Anders, Father Innocent, Father Augustino, and Father Angelus show us how faith can move mountains. Order your DVD at EWTNRC.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
Would you get on a plane that doesn't have a pilot? Investing in passive index mutual funds may present the same issue. The Ave Maria Mutual Funds are actively managed by seasoned investment professionals to help you meet your investment goals in a morally responsible way. Ave Maria funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors could invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Fund. You can learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
John, chapter 8, verse 51. Jesus is in a discussion with some of the leaders of the Jews. They're talking about Abraham. Abraham lived 1,500 years before the time of Jesus. So in the course of the discussion, Jesus says, "Truly, truly, I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he will never see death." He says that often in the Gospels. "He who keeps my word or believes in me will never die." To which the Jews say, "Now we know you have a demon." And they say, "Abraham died, as did the prophets. All the patriarchs, the great men and women of the history of Israel. All these people died, and you say, if anyone keeps my word, he will never taste death? Are you greater than our father Abraham, who died? And the prophets, who died?" And Jesus says, "Your father Abraham rejoiced that he was to see my day. He saw it and was glad." To which the Jews say, "You are not yet 50 years old, and you've seen Abraham?" And Jesus answers, "Truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am."
Last segment of The Doctor is In. I certainly appreciate the company. You taking a bit of your time. Listen in. Look back Friday. Got time for one more call. This is something that when I was in grad school, we studied this. We studied dreams. We studied what they mean. We also studied rats. We studied rat behavior in mazes. We studied rats and their learning and how they responded to reward and punishment. So we did a lot of things with dreams and a lot of things with rats. But the problem was, if you start dreaming about rats, that's not good. But I just noticed something here. Just hit me just now. Our caller, and there's a certain tie-in between dreams and rats because that's the coin of the realm for psychologists, experimental psychologists anyway. Remember the movie Ben, where it was a pet rat? Well, our caller is Ben. Really?
I'm a combat vet and diagnosed with PTSD and all that. And, you know, for the most part, it's pretty well managed. I'm not currently under anybody's care for it. I have this recurring dream, happens a couple times a year, where I don't commit a murder in the dream, but in the dream, I remember committing a murder. And the cops are after me, and I've got this you know, this guilt of telling my wife about it, and, you know, she's going to be, you know, I'm worried about how disappointed she's going to be in me for, you know, murdering somebody.
Well, not as long as she's not the one you killed, right?
Right. Okay. And, you know, letting down my kids and, you know, the kids I work with and just all this stuff. And then the really rough part is that it persists into waking. Like, even right now, I had it last night, and even right now, it's got this, like, knot of worry and guilt inside me. When you know, I drove by, like, four or five cops today when I was running errands, and every time I was like, oh, is they going to follow me? Is this it? But, like,
you think they know about your dream, huh?
Right. Okay. As soon as I think about it, I'm like, dude, you're being an idiot. Stop it. They're not, you know, you didn't do anything. It was a dream.
Well, wait a minute. I'm supposed to tell you that. I'm supposed to say, Ben, It's just a dream. You're being an idiot. Stop it.
So, but that's the thing. Like, I'm telling myself that, and it's not working.
You know what? Well, you know why it's not working?
Why?
Because you're afraid of the dream.
Letters after my name?
Well, that's part of it. Yeah, I'm glad you noticed that. Yeah, you don't have the training in dreams that I do. You know why it's not working? Because you're afraid of the dream. Why are you afraid of that dream?
I don't know.
What's it mean to you? What are you telling yourself? That you're a crazy wacko?
That I still feel guilty about stuff that happened?
Well, I don't know what happened, but it doesn't surprise me that you'd have a dream like that, given that as an Army veteran, I don't know what you saw, and I don't know what you had to do, but you were...
A lot of bad food.
Yeah, you were in circumstances that were life and death. So it doesn't surprise me that you'd have a dream about something like that. The problem is the dream makes you think something is wrong with you, right?
Yeah.
What if nothing was wrong with you? What if you said, this is not totally unexpected? What do I think? I was in some really turbulent, emotionally draining, high-pitched situations. And now that I've come back to ground, it's no shock here that some of that could manifest itself in my dream world. I'm telling you.
So kind of like acknowledge it and say, yep,
yeah,
that happened.
Yeah.
Dream stinks. Move on.
Yes. If you are not, you know, it could be worse. I'm going to tell you something, Ben. You could be having a worse dream. You know what that would be? That would be like if you were still in college and you went to class to take the final and you hadn't been to class the whole time. Now that's worse. I've had those all my life. And anybody who's gone to college has had that one. Two things you got to understand. One, obviously, your dream is not saying, Ben, you're messed up, man. You may think you're doing okay, but you're not. Your unconscious is telling you you're a wacko. All right? That's the first thing. That's really overinterpreting it, my friend. Two, if you say to yourself, okay, so I go to sleep. If I dream it, I dream it. So what? I'll wake up, and I'll be awake, and I'll be in reality and not in dream world. It's the fear of the dream that is keeping it fueled. If you don't fear it, if you don't overinterpret it, I think it'll go away.
I don't doubt that when Ben lays down to go to sleep, the anticipation of that particular recurrent dream is in his mind. I don't doubt that, because he's filled it with all kind of meaning. And what tends to happen, if you ever wake up, how much time I got here? Oh, I got about 2 minutes. I'm okay. Do you ever wake up from a particularly intense dream and you awaken and you're shook? You're really shook because it translates into your own physical reactions. Well, some of that's probably happening with Ben, and it's happening along a longer term. Most of the time when we have a nightmare or something, we wake up and we're scared, we're shook, our body's reacting, and it lasts a few minutes or 10 minutes, whatever, until we settle back down. Well, with Ben, what's happening is he's fueling it because he's thinking about it. He's wondering, why is this happening? And I know he's thinking, will this ever go away? Well, it will. It will go away with time as long as he attempts to strip it of its meaning, and he views it as an unconscious flashback to something that occurred to him of utmost emotional flashbulb memories, of course. Now, we didn't get a chance to get into this either. He said he feels guilty. Well, I would hope that he is a faithful man who has talked to a priest, has gone to confession, and recognizes that whatever he thinks and believes he did wrong, he's penitent about it, and he can leave it behind him. That would be big, too. There's so many things you can talk about when a caller calls in like this. And that's why I get these emails. Dr. Ray, you needed to say this. Well, yeah, there's only so much time to say certain things. Hence, Look Back Friday, where I get to say a few more things. That's the key to all of this. One of the ways that, 30 seconds, shoot. Well, I'm going to have to deal with this later. I was going to talk about one of the ways that psychologists deal with recurrent bad dreams. But that's for another day. I'll have to sleep on that tonight. Thank you for joining me, and thank you, Andrew Krucek, for all your editing. Once again, walk with God. Keep the children held by the hand. Let them hold the dog by the leash. You don't have to. You only have so many hands.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.